another day, another dollar makes you wonder where your money went.
Hello, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. It's always one man's view of the changing world and changing economic times and the things that we can do to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't. You got me on a morning commute again, folks. It's rainy, drizzly, 74 degrees, and as far as I'm concerned, beautiful, because we're still having a break from that heat. Again, I don't want to go into it too deep today, but Hurricane Ike is ravaging Cuba, on its way into the Gulf of Mexico after that, and will make landfall somewhere, we can bet, between Texas and Louisiana. That's pretty much a safe bet at this point. So again, be thinking about those folks, and if you're in that area, please be taking proper precautions, including getting out of Dodge if you're told to do so, or just think you need to do so. Nobody tells you to get out, but you think you need to get out. Do the right things and get out. That's all that I can say about that. Today's show is actually inspired last night, believe it or not. Had a gentleman come by the house that owns a painting company called Christian Painters. And we've used them to do some painting in some other rooms of our house when we first bought it that really needed it. And we're starting to get it really in shape for sale in the next, you know, year to 2 years and making that final move out. So we decided, you know, when it comes to painting, you can do it yourself and save a lot of money, or you can pay somebody that really does a good job and have them do it right. So we had him come over to give us an estimate of basically painting everything in the house that they haven't painted yet, doing some repairs to some of the walls and the roofs and things like that. And since we both work full-time jobs and we're gone every day and it'll probably never get done, if we do it ourselves, we decided we're gonna let these folks do this for us since they do a good price and a really great job. But while we were there, something strange kind of happened. Somehow he said something to the effect of, I digress, I don't want to get off on one of my New World Order rants. And I thought, well, heck, I'm going to pick up a listener to my show here. So I said, well, don't worry about that. And told him just about 10 seconds about what my show's about and said, hey, make sure you listen to it. And, you know, he gave me one of his websites to take a look at and wrote down mine. And I thought that would be it. But as he sat down to write up the estimate, we got into a long conversation. I bet it would have took him 5 minutes to finish that estimate and hand it to me, and we probably sat there for 30 to 40 minutes talking about all types of things with control of the government and eventual collapse of society and how people have been enslaved that don't know that they're enslaved and on and on and on. And one of the questions he asked me during this was, well, if you do the Survival Podcast, then how do you survive? And my initial reaction was I almost said, which problem? But I caught myself and I realized how many things that I've gone over on this show where the solution to them is pretty damn similar. But I also realized if I thought for that second when all this stuff's in my head just flows and I do 90% of this show without even notes, that, you know, somebody could have listened to all my shows, be asked the same question and not really have a concrete answer for it. So I decided to do this show and specifically answer that question and answer it with about 10 specific points. And this might even become a long show, and if it gets too long, I may break it in half and do the other half tomorrow. I'm not sure how this is going to work out yet, because I got a lot of ground to cover today. But I do think this is a show worth doing, and I think it could be quite enlightening and eye-opening for people. Well, the first words out of my mouth when he asked me that question, once I kind of got over that little speed bump, was real simple. Stay out of debt. That's step number one. Stay out of debt, and if you have debt, eliminate it. Get away from it. Because debt will enslave you. Because debt will make you, you know, do things you normally wouldn't do. It'll make you stay at a job you hate. It'll make you live in a city you don't want to live in. It'll force you into choices you would never make on your own. And then we went on to a long discussion after that, but we ended up coming back around, and we started talking about 1913. And then this brought us back into debt. So I want to explain how this circle works before I go into debt and how it imprisons you. And what I really want you to understand is how it works. And I don't mean how compounding interest works against you and all. I mean, if you don't understand that having debt with 13% of interest on it, where the interest compounds on the interest, I don't know that I can help you, right? And that's a pretty boring podcast. I want to talk about how the economy works to fund debt. See, I want you to think about it this way. If I'm here podcasting, and I have no way of knowing that the person that's logged on in Cedar, you know, Ridge, Iowa, what they know compared to the person in Jacksonville, Florida, compared to the person in Camden, Tennessee. Right? All these people in all these different parts of the country are at different levels of understanding. So I have to explain how certain things work, and you, even if you think you know, you may learn something new, or you may have a new way to explain it. And that's one of the things that I've started doing this podcast for. I've done a lot of public speaking, and I've done a lot of it on things like, I used to be in sales for a computer test equipment company, and I do talks on near-end crosstalk, which is, I'm not going to get into that, but it's a way that cables create interference from one pair of wires to the next. And I would find ways to explain that to people that had been doing the business for 10 years and only knew if the tester said pass or fail, where they actually understood it. And those same ways were then used by people that always understood it to better train their teams. And they would come up to me and say, hey, you know, I can't thank you enough for that analogy. So maybe if I start using some analogies like that on here, I think I've been doing that, it'll help you when you're trying to explain something you understand to somebody who just isn't getting it. So here's the analogy for why I have to explain how things work. Let's say that you had a task. We're going to call it a survive task. But your survive task is just a metaphor. All you have to do to survive is drive from Los Angeles to New York. Okay? That's it. Now, some people would be like, man, I don't even know where Los Angeles is, and I don't know how to drive, and I don't have a driver's license or a car. And then some people would be like, oh, L.A. to New York? Well, that's easy. You take I-10 all the way into Texas through El Paso. You take I-10 all the way to the 20 merge. You take 20 through Dallas all the way up to the east side of Dallas. You jump on I-30. You take I-30 through Arkansas, Little Rock, all the way up to and they could just lay the interstate system out for you out of their head. But if you were going to have to get into a car that was, let's say, a 1970 Chevy car, just a Nova or something like that, that maybe was not just overhauled by a mechanic and it ran, but it ran all right, one of the tasks that all of those people may not, or one of the things that all of those people may not understand is how that car works. And if you want to get from L.A. to New York, you're probably going to have to do some on-the-way repairs. So you have to understand how the car works, right? So that's why it's important to understand how things work. And what we're going to start with how things work is how the Federal Reserve works and how it creates what I call willing enslavement. Because what this man asked me, he said, well, why do you think that we did this? And there's a million theories on why we went into the Federal Reserve. There's textbook theories that actually explain there wasn't enough money around. We didn't have enough money. By having a currency 100% backed in gold and controlled by the government, we actually ran out of dollars, which is not really true, but, you know, a case could be made for some level of the currency not being 100% backed, I guess, with that argument at the time that the economy was growing faster than the exploration of things like gold. But the reality is that if gold went up in price, you still got a dollar's worth of it, okay? So a dollar for a dollar with gold worked pretty well, and both the dollar and gold were very stable. But there's a lot of other theories, and some of them are what I call the tinfoil hat theories, you know, the puppet masters and all. My belief is far more sinister than most of those. My belief in why we have a Federal Reserve System, why we have the ability for a private entity to control the money supply and print it at will, basically. And they do. They print it at will against the goodwill of the American people. And they inflate the money supply anytime they want to. And so if you created fake money that was based only on a person's activity level, only on their effort, only on what they did, that you control the people. And what I mean by that is if you can inflate or deflate the value of the dollar to where I need $100 to do today what $10 did yesterday, okay? And the only thing that that dollar is really backed by is effort, energy, and output, then I have to commit my effort, energy, and output to get my hands on that new $100. And I have to work harder to get the same result. Once you do that, and once you create this huge volume of dollars, right, because a lot of these dollars are electronic today, right, they're not real. And once you create that system, then you can create a credit system. You can create a credit system where the organization making the money loans it to the government at a profit, right? And then you create little microcosms of it where you go in debt to buy a house. not necessarily that bad a thing. And long before there was this fake money solution to the problem, we had something akin to a mortgage. People would borrow money to buy a home. They would pay it off relatively quickly, though. 5 years was a long time to be in debt for a home 150 years ago, but people would do it because it was a lifetime purchase. It was worth 5 years of paying off to own it for the rest of your life. Okay? That's how it used to be viewed. But today, now we take out a loan to buy a TV set. Take out a loan to buy a stereo system. Take out a loan to buy a big freaking Mac. There are people that use credit cards, not debit cards, but true credit cards at McDonald's. I've seen them there. All right, they buy an extra value meal for $3.99 with their Visa card. It ends up costing them $12. Right. So as soon as you do that, all these people that used to be completely, totally independent-minded people, and if you think about this country in 1880, 80% of the men in this country or more probably owned and knew how to use a gun. Any given individual that was a productive member of society had a concrete skill, at least one. Many had multiple skill sets. And I mean, these were things like knowing how to farm, knowing how to work on equipment, knowing how to repair things, knowing how to build things, knowing how to sew things, knowing how to live, no matter what. You know, if all of a sudden all the imports stopped, most of the people in this country in 1880 wouldn't have cared. You know, they really wouldn't have. They go saw a tree down. Joe has a sawmill down the road. He can cut the trees and the lumber, and we can still build a house for the Smiths that just moved into the neighborhood. There's 27 different families here that know how to do house construction. All right. Food short, that's all right. We're going to plow up a few of the reserve acres and plant some more food this year. I mean, that's how the mentality was. So how do you enslave people like that? How do you enslave an armed, skilled, healthy group of independent people? Well, you can't do it in a generation. It takes multiple generations for them to lose what they've lost. You start by creating a Federal Reserve System that prints money at will that has a credit system that goes with it. Then you put shiny things in front of people, all right? Look at what the rich people have. You could have that too today for $2 a month is all your payment will be on, you know, prototype one of the MasterCard. And it just evolved from there. And today what we have are hundreds of millions of people in the United States alone that are completely, totally enslaved by debt. And we've now moved to a position where a person that comes out of college walks out of college enslaved. They're carrying $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, some of these people $100,000 to $150,000 in debt to get a degree that will give them an entry-level position at $30,000 to $40,000 a year if they're lucky. So they're enslaved. They are now being enslaved on their way out of school with enough debt to buy a house in middle America. All right? They start with one house on their back before they even take a step into careerhood, all right? This is what the system's brought. So when you ask me, why do we have a Federal Reserve System, that's my answer. Here's 200 million people enslaved to corporations through debt. Now, they bear their own individual responsibility for it. You don't have to go there, but if you create that system, a large portion of the sheep will follow into it. And as time goes on, the number that will participate that way grows and grows and grows. So what's your solution? Stay away from it. Stay out of it. Only use debt as a tool. Debt is a tool. And just like a sledgehammer can be used to drive a stake in the ground, if someone takes it away from you and beats you with it, they can kill you with it. All right? You have to understand and respect the tool. Same thing with a gun. A gun is a tool. It's for defending your home. It's for harvesting food. It's for target shooting. It's for sporting. It's for all of those things. You know, it's for defending your land. It's defending your country if it has to be that. All right? It's making some guy that would want to make one of you or your loved ones dead, dead first. But somebody takes it away from you, they can shoot you with it. You abuse it, it can kill you. Or it can maim you. Or it can cripple you. Or worse, it can kill, maim, or cripple someone you love. And debt can do the same thing. Debt works the same way. So if you understand how it works, if you understand why it exists in the first place, then you will stay away from it. And it took me, I didn't wake up knowing this. I mean, my grandparents tried to teach me this. I had to go deep into debt and come back out the other side of it to understand it. And when you come out the other side of it, you truly understand it. And so that's like my biggest piece of advice. And I've used up, you know, 15 minutes almost just to explain that, but there's a reason. It is the most important thing that you can do. If you stay out of debt, you'll be able to do all the other things that you need to get done to live a good life. The second thing out of my mouth was have a means of defense of the things that you own, that you have, and make sure that you are willing, able, and knowledgeable in how to use them. Make sure you can defend your home. If you're in America and you can own a firearm, I believe that means owning firearms. I absolutely believe that in my heart and soul. Because there is no better defensive weapon than a gun. And people can make cases against it if they want to. I do not care. I see it as your constitutional, you know, decried right. And as such, it is not just a right, it's a duty I see as an American, at least especially as an American male. I think women should do it too, but I think an American male over the age of 18, if you don't know how to use a gun properly, go get trained and buy one. The more people, it's like voting, the more people that exercise the right, the harder it will be to take it away. So having that means of defense, and if you live somewhere where you can't own a firearm under the law, then you need to find other means of defense. I don't care if it's a taser gun, a can of mace, a samurai sword, a baseball bat. Whatever it is, have a defensive plan for your home so that you can defend it if somebody comes and tries to take things away from you. And that could be a random burglar, or it could be the shit has hit the fan and society has started to loot people's homes. And I promise you that unless you have a well-trained, you know, group of people that are well-armed, the average random looter will immediately choose to take an easier avenue if he thinks he's going to get shot or beaten to death by trying to take from a given group of people. Or go somewhere else. They will take the path. They're like water down a hill. They'll take the path of least resistance every time. So that's another fundamental of survival. I'm not going to go deep into it because I want to cover a lot of ground in this show. But that's one of the things you have got to do if you want to be a survivor today. Whether things get bad or even if they don't, you must be able to defend yourself. You must be able to defend the people around you. And that is not just in your home. That is when you're walking down the street. If you are a provider for a family, either a sole provider or one half provider for a family, and you don't come home, you can't take care of your family. You failed in your job. And that means if somebody walks up on you on the street and tries to harm you, you should have a way to take them out. And again, if you live in a state that allows it, I suggest you go get a concealed carry permit. And you exercise your right to carry. You follow the law. You do what you're supposed to. You know when and when not to be able to use deadly force. And in all these states, you're going to have to take a course that's going to make that abundantly clear. But if you can't do that, then I suggest you get yourself a can of mace. I suggest you get yourself a taser. I suggest you carry your butt down to a good martial arts studio and at least learn some ways to defend yourself. And I'm not talking about becoming Bruce Lee, folks. I'm not talking about having a lot of glory. I'm talking about you learn how to break a hold, put pain on a person, and run if that's what it needs. This is not about, you know, the question is not how do you take over, how do you become Rambo, how do you become badass, how do you survive? You survive by living. That's the goal of survival, living and being able to live better than most of the people around you. That's survival and that's thriving, all right? That's what we're here to teach you, and defense is a big part of that. You know, another thing I did during this conversation is I pointed out my window at my garden, and I said, you see that? There's food out there right now. There's some summer squash. The winter squash is just starting to grow. They're little, but they'll be ready in another couple weeks. I'll be picking some of those. There's the winter beans are coming up and growing. There's going to be purple beans. There's going to be green beans. The jalapenos are still producing. Hatch New Mexican peppers are still producing. There's some greens out there growing. I'm going to be planting more greens this weekend because the weather's finally broke this massive heat. I'm going to throw some carrots in the ground. There's some beets out there. You know, there's food right there. And that's another part of survival, man, being able to produce your own food. That's why I've done so many shows on gardening. That's something that you absolutely need. I don't care if you're in an apartment. Get yourself some window boxes out on your patio or in your window or whatever and grow lettuce and greens and things like that. Have some means to produce some level of your own food. That creates freedom. That's what the DeVos family would tell you. That when you start to grow food, it's dangerous because you realize that if you can grow enough, you can create complete and total freedom. That the number one thing that we need other than a roof over our head is food in our bellies. And as long as we can put food in our bellies, we are only so enamored with the system, right? If you can feed yourself, clothe yourself, cover yourself, and put water into yourself, you can do that for your family, and you can do all of those things, how much do you really need a $200,000 income that so many people are striving for today, or a $100,000 income, or even $50,000? How much do you need society? Right? Society's wonderful if it's by choice. Anything is wonderful if it's by choice. Remember when I was talking about debt? A lot of this stuff works like this. Some of the old science fiction stuff, especially like the old Star Trek is a great example. They did a lot of like reality plays, or morality plays, that's the word I'm looking for. And they would end up in a situation where basically this alien species had captured Kirk and his other guys, right? And they're going to offer them basically to be pets. That's what they would be. But they would live in a paradise. You have everything you want here. Why would you want to leave? And you know, it would always be because we're not free. And I think that if you put that choice in front of anybody, 99% of people would say, I would rather live in squalor than not be able to do as I choose. But when you make it dressed up a different way, society is wonderful. Look at the trendy clubs in this area that you're going to pay five times what the house is worth that doesn't do anything for you as far as beyond the roof and walls. But there's trendy clubs in shopping and you can walk downtown. Wonderful. Wonderful. So I'm going to pay $800,000 for a house that if I moved it 15 miles away would sell for about $85,000. Right? Because it doesn't have a speck of land, it's 800 square feet, two bedrooms crammed into it, but it's trendy, right? That, then people willingly walk into slavery. Food, shelter, water, clothing. Provide those things for yourself, and you don't need to worry about trendy. What you need to worry about is making sure that you take measures to defend and protect those. Grow food, very, very important. You know, the next thing is avoid taxation at all opportunities. You know what? When you're looking to buy something, if you can buy it used from somebody for cash, there's no sales tax. Do that. You reduce demand on the system. You recycle something. You make something that was useless to somebody else, useful to yourself. Right? So that takes away from state tax. As you develop your own set of freedom, voluntarily reduce your salary. Once you save enough money, once you store enough money, once you create a lifestyle that requires less income, don't put yourself at the stress of earning more income. Find ways to earn just enough money to provide everything you need and still continue to save and invest. It's pretty simple. Now, here's the magic in that. People talk about a revolution in this country. I'm going to describe for you a revolution in this country that would be so subversive and absolutely something that no one could defend against, that would take our nation back, that would reign in control of our government. If 50 million individuals, roughly, what is that, 12%, 12 to 15% of our population, decided, you know what, Jack Spirko's right, the hell with this, paid off all their debt, eliminated debt, refused to go into another penny of it, paid off their homes, went off into somewhere in the country and found a way to be largely self-sufficient, started working with other people, started buying used whenever they could, started bartering with each other, started becoming little autonomous regional groups, those 50 million people would so cut the flow of dollars within the system, so cut the tax flow within the system, we would bring the government to its knees without firing a shot, without raising a picket sign. I'm going to write a book, I've actually started writing the prologue to it, called Reclaiming America, and that's going to be one major portion of the book is discussing how people could reclaim the nation simply by choosing not to use the system. Because the system has become the driving force to both continue to expand the empire and enslave the population. So simply by opting out of the system, saying, you know what, I don't need $100,000 a year income. I can live on $25,000 for my whole household. And I can go into a barter society where I pay almost nothing in taxes. And I'll just take away my contribution to the empire. I might have to work in the system for a while. I might have to do what the immigrants did in the 1800s. I might have to come here and metaphorically lay some railroad ties, bust my ass, work at a coal mine to save up enough money to, you know, get out of the company store. We'll talk about that someday if you don't know what a company store is. But just, you know, Google coal mine company store and you'll learn what a company store is. to get out of the company store and out of the company housing and move myself out up with my mule and 40 acres. All right? We might have to do that. But if enough of us work through the system that way, we'll bring the system to its knees. It's interesting. And we'll also survive. We'll survive whatever they throw at us. We'll be in a great position to survive at that point. I've done some rough estimates, and I think that's what it would take. It'd take about 50 million people. That's a pretty noble, lofty goal, but it is something that's very possible. You get 50 million Americans living the way the majority of the 600,000 Americans in Montana live, and it's over. This empire expansion, this constant parasitic living of a massive corded, bloated corpse of bureaucracy off the efforts of the American people, it's done. It's finished. We can take it back anytime we want to. Basically, what I'm telling you is all we have to do is find a way to live for next to nothing and then do it. And the longer we do it, the more weak the system will become. And sooner or later, the system will return to the constitutional nature of what it is, because that's what the people here really want in their hearts. The next thing I want to point out is not just storing food, but understanding the investment value of food and other supplies. One thing we have to accept is that there is inflation. It's a greater number than anything anybody publishes. All you have to do is look at your checkbook at the end of any given month and see how the value of what's left at the end of the month continually declines or is always a zero, okay? To know that inflation is continuing upward. No matter how much more money you make, you seem to have a zero at the end of the month. Or whatever you do have left over, it continues to decline in its volume. Now, you can remedy a lot of that. You can remedy a lot of that by, following rule one, staying out of debt. But inflation's still there. So one of the things that people think about is, well, if I buy this extra food this week and store it up, the money's gone. Well, the money's not gone. It's invested. And it's a hell of a lot better of investment right now than a mutual fund. Heck, right now it's a better investment than real estate. So when you buy something like that, and you put it up on a shelf, and you're not going to consume it for 6 months, you can just about guarantee that 6 months later when you eat it, if you went out and bought it that day, it would cost you more, okay? Food has been going up, 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 up. And with the stupid moves that we're making, like going into biofuels, some of the environmental problems that we're having, all these other things, you're going to see food continue to go up. So if you understand the investment value of food, you'll be more likely to put up stores, to save food, to save other supplies, because you realize that anything that I'm eventually going to use or consume in the future, buying it today and buying the best I can get today will be a better investment for it tomorrow than putting the money in the bank and letting inflation eat away at it. In the same lines of thinking with investing in food and supplies, I know that there's a lot of my listeners that are really into alternative energy. I have people with different schools of thought. Some people want alternative energy because they want to live off-grid. And they don't want to do it to make a political statement. They just simply want to buy a really cheap piece of land in some beautiful part of the country. And the only opportunity they have to really do that is to buy some land that's not served by the electrical cooperative. I have people that are interested in it simply because they want to reduce the cost of living. And I have people that believe in Al Gore's carbon footprint bullshit. And I'm sorry to say that, folks, if you're one of those people, but I think it's bullshit. It's a system designed to create global taxation and this global monetary fund and global debt. If you don't want to believe that, that's fine. You'll see the writing on the wall sooner or later. You'll be able to look at it and go, gee, this looks like the United States economy and the Federal Reserve System, except it's all over the world. But let that go for now. My view is if you want to survive, invest in alternative energy sources for your home that are good investments. Now, you spend as much as you have to. If you live in the mountains of Montana and there's no electrical wire, whatever you need to provide yourself with, you just go do it. But if you live somewhere where you can utilize the grid, you're probably better off doing like a grid tie system, solar backup system, and slowly adding on to it. Because solar panels are one thing that are getting more efficient and less expensive right now. And any other means of like environmentally friendly things, if they're good investments, do them. If they're going to add to the value of your home, do them. If they're going to protect you because you're not using something that has a toxin in it in your home, do them. But if you think it's reducing your carbon footprint, saving the freaking manatees, or making the striped-tailed foofy flu of northern Africa happier, don't do it for those reasons. Think about concrete cost, short-term and long-term. What's your time of recovery on cost? and what kind of independence does it grant you? Those are the reasons to invest in renewable and alternative energy for your personal use. And that's where they're the most powerful. It's going to be a long, long time, if ever, before we can even provide 25% of the electricity that this nation consumes, at least at current levels where we light up Madison Avenue and Times Square, okay? From solar power and wind power, even combined. There's no way we're going to do 25% of those energy demands. They're going to have to do things like nuclear. They're going to have to continue to burn gas. They're going to have to... There's tons of different ways to generate electricity. But these really safe, environmentally friendly ways, there's only so much can be done with them at a national level, unless we have my revolution. Now, 50 million people, you know, take part in a revolution, which is going back to the land and reduce demand to where capacity is overloaded. Yeah, then maybe it can happen. It's going to take that kind of a revolution. But that has to be done not because, you know, you're such a green freak that you think you're saving the planet because you choose to live miserably or you choose to spend every penny you have on solar energy or wind energy or what have you. But if you do it smart, you don't go into debt for it. You create freedom with it. Then it's a very, very powerful tool towards survival. The next thing is, and I don't think anybody will be shocked to hear me say this, own land. Now, I did have somebody that commented on my blog where I said that owning land is true wealth. And they said they don't completely buy into that because you could write pages and pages and pages about people who have been screwed out of their land. Eminent domain and other things, I imagine, is what he was talking about. And that's true to a degree. There are people that have been screwed out of their land. There's also been people that have been screwed out of their money. There's been people that have been screwed out of their car. There's been anything a person can possess has been either legally or illegally stole from somebody else. Now, that's just reality. I still believe that land, specifically paid for land, is wealth. And I have two major pieces of advice for you when you're looking at land. Number one, find land with low to no taxes, unincorporated. I don't care what you got to do. If you buy, even if you have paid for land, and you end up in a situation where you're annual taxes are $6,000 a year, and I know places that's way higher than that. I know some people in New Jersey that pay almost $12,000, but this is $6,000 a year in property taxes. Okay? That doesn't take a genius to figure out that's $500 a month. You might as well be paying $500 a month for renting an apartment. It's going to be, you know, that's $6,000 that you don't have for your other lifestyles. Give you an example of what is available if you look hard enough and in the right places. My place in Arkansas is 5 acres, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, nice place. It is on a dirt road. It's only a mile of dirt. It's less than a mile of dirt, probably 3/4 of a mile of dirt from where the pavement ends. But our property taxes are about $325 a year. That is all our taxes. That is school, that is county, that is hot. That's everything they throw at us. $325 a year. I could go probably hawk one thing I own every year for the next 10 years to cover that if I had to. So that's what's available out there. Conversely, we pay almost $4,000 a year in taxes at our place here in Arlington, which is one of the reasons I wanted to divest myself of it eventually. Because the value they say my property's worth today here at the tax office, I told them if somebody pays me that money, if somebody's willing to spend that much to buy my house, they just bought a house. Because I'll live in a tent to get that kind of capital out of it. But, you know, we're stuck with that for now, and it's part of our decision to live in and live off the system as a means of creating freedom. But we know what we're doing, and we know why we're doing it. But that's the biggest one, is find land with low taxes. If you buy land with high taxes, you're enslaving yourself to a different type. Even if you own the land outright, own the structure on it outright, have no mortgage on it, you're enslaving yourself to the taxing body. There's a lot of land left out there that's really hard for them to justify high taxes on. Find yourself a piece of land like that. My next suggestion, do not buy land or a home where there is a homeowners association. Do not allow one to be formed in your community. If somebody tries to form one, do whatever you have to, barring breaking the law to prevent it from occurring. And if somebody tried to do it in my neighborhood, I would be on the edge of going to threaten people. I probably wouldn't do it because I got too cool of a head. But honestly, man, I would fight that almost as hard as invading freaking communists at the border of Texas with tanks. A homeowners association, to me, is one of the most insidious piles of bullshit ever created, and they always seem to end up being run by a bunch of old blue-haired women and gay guys with designer sense that have nothing else to do with their time except drive around and find things to bitch about. And I've seen people find tax, and I've seen people lose their home. We had a radio show host here talking about people that were basically evicted from their own house for failure to comply with bullshit like, you know, how big a vehicle they park in their driveway, or having a freaking American flag in their front yard, or the goddamn color of their mailbox. Homeowners associations allow people that have nothing better to do with their time to try to make everybody else live the way that they live. They are the antithesis of liberty. Your home is your castle, and your land is your kingdom, and with, you know, within reason, you should be able to do what you want. If somebody starts telling you what color you can paint your house, what kind of car you can have in your driveway, or what color your freaking mailbox can be, and in some places, what color your Christmas lights are supposed to be, they've gone too far. Homeowners associations should be treated like hot lava. Stay away from them. Don't go near them. Don't get involved with them, and oppose them at every and all opportunity. If you're part of one and you think it's wonderful, that's fine. Keep it the hell out of my neighborhood, and I promise you out in the country, people don't want one anyway. But I decided to throw that in there. No homeowners associations. It's like living in a theme park and being forced to take part in whatever the theme park decides to do next. There's just no liberty there. Stay away from them. Okay, I think I am going to get through this one today. But I want to kind of wrap up with two more thoughts. Number one is, you know, this has been said on so many survival blogs, so many forums, but it needs to be said every time there's an opportunity. Keep cash. Have cash on hand. And I don't just mean a big, fat bank account. Have a few hundred dollars at least somewhere safe that you can get your hands on it if all the electricity goes out. If everything closes down, have some cash. Get a strong box, get a firebox, bolt it to the wall, bolt it to the floor. Do whatever you need to make yourself feel safe with keeping some cash on hand, but have some damn cash on hand, because if you don't, you're at, you know, kind of a weak point. Maybe if you can't get to the bank, if there's a disaster happens on a Sunday afternoon when the bank's closed and you need money to do something on the way out or when you get where you're going, and there's a great electrical failure and you can't use your credit cards, you're really in deep trouble. You know, and I think I've talked about this before, but I was in New York when there was a blackout, and everybody freaked out. People walked across bridges, and, you know, I mean, the whole damn island was out. You know, and I luckily I didn't have to worry about a hotel because I'd already checked into my hotel for the evening. The hotel did need a little bit of time to get the backup power on enough to where the electric locks to the doors would let us in our rooms. They eventually got that done. But while everybody was freaking out, I went and found a little place, a little cafe. And they said, yeah, we're still taking orders. We cook with gas. We don't take credit cards or checks because we can't verify anything right now, but we'll take cash. So I had a couple beers and a really nice bowl of pasta and kicked back and watched all the commotion. Then I went to bed, and in a nice bed, and it was because I had cash on me. Always keep cash available to yourself one way or another. I also believe I'm thrown into this category having some real money. I don't care if you have $10 worth of silver coins. Have some, you know, gold or silver, what I call real money, U.S. currency, pre-1964 silver coinage. And if you want to buy gold, silver, rounds, bars, anything else like that, gold, mutual, do whatever you want. Talk to your financial advisor. I'm not talking about major investments here. I'm talking $10 to $100 to maybe $1,000, depending on what you want to keep personally in silver coinage. And at least $10. And $10 in silver coinage will probably cost you just 10 ounces of silver at spot price, $18, $180. You can call that investment advice if you want to. I'm not even afraid of being sued over that. Having $180 worth of silver around is probably a good idea, which, you know, is $10 face value in dimes and quarters and 50-cent pieces or dollars, you know, what have you. You can probably find it for less than that if you're smart about the way you buy it. But have that, you know, and use, you know, like I said yesterday, the guy said that a real survivalist on his blog does things like set up college funds for your kids. Have good, solid investments based on companies that actually make a profit, that aren't just leveraged in the technology sector or whatever, that pay dividends. Have a good, solid portion of your portfolio put into that. Have insurance, life insurance, right? Make sure you cover yourself and your spouse. Have homeowners insurance. Have fire. If you live in a place where there's any possibility of a flood, make sure your house is covered for a flood. Use the system until you can get out of it. All right? And that's just basic. That's how you survive. If your husband or wife dies, and you have enough money to pay for the debt you have at least and fund your existence for the next year, you'll be able to figure out how to get back on your feet. You may even still have to make a move that you really didn't want to do, but at least you'll do it on your terms and your choices. If you're not insured, you are just totally exposed. You are an irresponsible provider if you don't insure your own life. My view is you buy the cheapest term insurance you can get. You insure your debt. Don't mix your insurance and your investments. That's another survival tactic right there that any good advisor will tell you. All right, the people that mix insurance and investments that are really smart about it are worth freaking hundreds of millions of dollars. And there's certain insurance products they can buy that you can't, that really are good investments for them, that really preserve their wealth, that make sure it gets handed down. There's people that basically buy tons of life insurance because they don't need the money, so that they can leave the result of their death to their children tax-free. All right, that's not you. All right, it just isn't you. You're not worth $100 million. Don't try to act like you are. That's how you end up in debt with MasterCard. That's the kind of financial aspect of this. Now, you know, just being realistic, I could have taken any one of these points and done an entire show on it. In fact, many of them I already have, many of them I will, and many that I've done I'll do again. So I didn't really go deep into any of them except maybe the first point because I think it's so important to understand that, you know, how the Federal Reserve works, and I'll do maybe a whole show one day and nothing about that, break down the genesis of it. But, you know, I just kind of highlighted all these things because I think it's important, and I think you could run through that list if you memorized it in like 2.5 minutes. How do you survive? Well, stay out of debt. Make sure that you have some real money. Boom, 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 right through it, right? And that's how you could tell somebody that's asking you, what the hell does it mean to be a survivalist, what it means? Being able to defend your home, you know. That's how I answered the question to the gentleman that started this initially. It was, you know, a minute and 30 seconds to answer it. And now here it is, a 44-minute podcast. But what I want you to extract from it, and if you go to my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and click on Modern Survival Philosophy, you'll see just about everything I talked about this show in an article that I wrote when I published the website originally. And the last point you'll see is the last point I want to talk about today, and that's develop your own philosophy and belief system. See, what I believe doesn't mean anything. I have people write me all the time and go, I love your show, even though I don't agree with everything you say. Right? And they almost said, some of them are real clear about it, but some of them almost seem apologetic. Like, I wish I didn't have to tell you that, but I feel like I need to because some of the things you say I just don't agree with. Good. If you agreed with everything I said, then that would mean I'm doing absolutely nothing and I'm absolutely meaningless. See, the goal of a politician is to say things in such a way that everybody agrees with everything they said. I'm not a politician and I don't want to be. My job is to make you think and then make you figure out what matters to yourself. So develop your own philosophy of survival. Develop your own belief system. But above all, know why you believe what you believe. Do not believe everything the TV tells you, because the TV lies to you. Do not believe what the system tells you, because the system lies to you. Do not believe that you need to have something new and shiny because the commercial on the TV told you. Do not believe that your product that you already own is obsolete because somebody said it's obsolete. It's obsolete when it no longer does what you need. Don't replace it until that's the case. There'll probably be a better model available then than there is today. All right? But, above all, find your own survival philosophy. And I don't just mean surviving the shit hitting the fan. Find your own philosophy of survival for day-to-day life. Form your own moral, ethical, and action code. What you should and should not do. What your standard procedure should and should not be. What you should save, what you should not save. How you should invest your money, how you should purchase insurance, how you should not. If you completely disagree with me, I don't care. Find your own philosophy to follow it. People that do that will survive. Even with dramatically different philosophies, if you know what you believe, why you believe, if you have an internal compass that keeps you guided, that keeps you centered, if at least in those things are not being a slave to debt and having a code of ethics and having a compass that points toward liberty, if it's that basic, you can change all the other parts of it. It'll still work for you. It'll still keep you free. It'll still help you survive. And it'll still help you do what we're pledged to help you do. That is to live a better life if times get tough. or even if they don't. That wraps up today's episode, folks. Again, this is Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast. Please do go by our website. Comments, questions, suggestions are always welcome. We're still running the Listener Appreciation Contest. Two of you folks, I've been giving you a stay off here. I'm about to give your books away. Dan Tanner, if you're listening, I emailed you personally and told you you won. If I don't get a shipping address from you today, your book's going to somebody else. And so if you haven't taken part in a Listener Appreciation Contest, please do, because the big prize is still available. I'm trying to line up some other prizes for it, but right now you can win an iPod Nano when we hit 1,000 Feedburner listeners. Details of the contest are there. Again, comments and suggestions are appreciated. I get comments and suggestions every day. Again, if I haven't done the show or you suggested yet, don't think I'm not going to do it. I just put these things together as they flow and work, and I only have a limited time to put together notes to do these shows and do research behind them. Again, this has been Jack Spirko. Please tune in tomorrow for another edition of the Survival Podcast. It really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.